It's The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick. After an 8-month military offensive, Iraqi forces announced that they successfully recaptured Mosul from the Islamic State earlier this month. Major combat is over in Iraq's second largest city, but life is far from normal. Hundreds of thousands of Iraqis have been displaced, infrastructure has been leveled, and despite military defeat in Mosul, ISIS and the threat of violence linger. Rukmini Kalamaki is correspondent for our partner, The New York Times. She's covering ISIS, and she's been on the ground in Mosul, where she says the fighting has split the city in two. The eastern half of Mosul was liberated months ago and is largely intact, but the old city in the west is devastated.
So when you go into the old city, the first thing that strikes you is just the stench of death. So as soon as you open your doors, that's the first thing that you notice is the smell of rotting bodies. And that's because a lot of people died in the airstrikes and in the artillery that was used to try to take back the city. Next, you notice just the sheer and utter decimation of the infrastructure of the city. Block after block after block has been reduced to rubble. You can see houses and buildings where half has been shorn off and the other half is open. A colleague of mine described it like looking into a dollhouse. But then even as you begin climbing your way through these ruins, you begin to see the signs of the Islamic State and the terror group's rule. We were able to come across a sword that was used inside of the headquarters of their religious police in Western Mosul. And the military units that we were with picked it up and said that this is one of the swords that they used for beheading prisoners. On the ground, we found pieces of paper that had the ISIS logo on them. And then throughout both Eastern and Western Mosul, anytime you see an elementary school, oftentimes elementary schools here are decorated with cartoon characters and images, you know, that children would find appealing. And you find in every single case, the terror group went around and blotted out the face of this cartoon character. So I shared an image with my Twitter followers of a painting of Donald Duck, where Donald Duck's face had been blotted out. This is in keeping with their reading of this extremely strict version of Islam, which sees the depiction of sentient life of any kind to be a violation of Islamic rules.
So, Rukmini Kalamaki, now that the residents of Mosul are looking at life without occupation from a religious force that has tactics ranging from beheading to blotting out the face of Donald Duck, what are they saying about returning home and about what life might be like over the next weeks and months?
Well, the thing to keep in mind is that the Islamic State is still present. Even in eastern Mosul, which was liberated months ago, we just finished an interview this afternoon with a young woman who I met last November. She was evacuated from there last November. And she and her family say that they have repeatedly flagged to authorities a man that they know was an Islamic State preacher who was their neighbor. And that man is still living in his house, according to them, and has not been arrested yet. So throughout this metropolis, and this was a very large city, it was the second largest city in Iraq, ISIS is still believed to be present. And as a result, people are afraid. And until the sleeper cells are dismantled, it's hard to see how normalcy will return.
A military defeat for a force like ISIS doesn't mean they go away. And I wonder if forces there that you've been talking to and traveling with are now ready to fight the next war, which may be low-level ISIS insurgency.
Well, keep in mind that ISIS's caliphate is far from over. So even though Mosul has been technically freed of ISIS control, just in Iraq, you still have the cities of Tal Afar, the city of Hawija, the deserts of Anbar, and several other smaller localities in between that remain under ISIS control. Tal Afar, according to the census that was done before ISIS's invasion in 2014, had a population of 200,000 people. That is similar to the population of Raqqa, which is the group's self-declared capital in Syria. So just in Iraq, you have another Raqqa that needs to be cleared before we can even start talking about ISIS's caliphate being over. The problem that forces here are facing is that they will declare an area cleared of ISIS rule, and then days to weeks to months later, you will see suicide explosions begin, shootouts will happen, mortar attacks. And so even when areas are cleared, very soon after, you will see the start of violence by the group again.
Does the Iraqi government have a strategy to deal with ISIS in the aftermath as they lose territory in places like Mosul?
I think the strategy right now is go, go, go. You know, so even as they've declared victory in Mosul, we're hearing that they're gearing up to start the operation in Tal Afar on the 25th, which is essentially next week. People in Mosul, myself included, reporters who are here, are a little nervous about this because that means there's going to be a large troop movement leaving Mosul and going to another area at a point in time when, in parts of the old city that we visited, our security advisor asked us to not even get out of the car. That's how unsafe we felt.
We had your colleague Tim Arango on the show last week, and he's recently written about the overwhelming influence of Iran in Iraq now. How Shiite militias on our side against ISIS have set up supply lines and corridors to supply Shiite proxies in Lebanon and Syria, that Iran is dominating Iraq's politics, even its economy. Has the U.S. lost influence in Iraq while focusing on ISIS and terror groups?
I think the U.S. lost influence in Iraq when we began a troop drawdown several years ago. So basically, at that point, we went from being the biggest client state in Iraq to reducing ourselves to a smaller player. And now in Iraq, there's very much a jostling and a competition between groups here that are loyal to the United States and therefore to a Western-facing future, and those that are loyal to Iran.
Is there any way to know now what that means for the future and strategically in this region?
So in the short term, I think that their presence has essentially accelerated the fight against ISIS. However, the problem is that these militias, and especially the ones that have the most support from Iran, are the ones that in general have been accused of the worst abuses. Videos have surfaced of their members dragging corpses, carrying out summary executions. And what is troubling for me as somebody who studies extremism is that many of these Iranian-backed militias, in a way, ape the same language as ISIS. They talk about a holy war. They talk about what they're doing here as being a form of jihad. And so you wonder, what are we doing? What are we replacing? You know, we're pushing out ISIS, which of course everybody agrees is, you know, a catastrophic force. But what are we replacing it with?
Rukmini Callimachi has been on the ground in Mosul and in Iraq. She's foreign correspondent for our partner, The New York Times. Rukmini, thanks again.
Thanks for having me, Todd. Take care.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here? And maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.